So part two of Abraham, except he's still Abram, where we left off. Avram in Hebrew. Avraham is when it becomes Abraham. But so why is Abraham important? He's the father of everything. He's the father of the nations. That's what his name means. And all the Jews, all the Arabs are descended from Abraham. So that one guy gave rise to all those people that are basically in the Middle East. To that, Avram was his, you know, sort of pagan name. And then when God gives him promises and then he shows that he's going to be obedient, then God changes his name to Abraham, which means the father of the nations, because this is going to be like his position. He's always called Father Abraham. There's even songs about Father Abraham, right? Little kid songs. And when you look through the Old Testament scriptures, Abraham and Moses are by far the most important people, probably followed by David. But Abraham's the father of the people. And interestingly, there, of course, were no people at this point because God sovereignly picks Abram to be Abraham. Remember, his father was an idol maker. He was a wealthy guy. He was about 75 years old when he got called. And so God decides to make the chosen people starting with this one guy. Really pretty amazing. Sovereignly. Not because Abraham was, you know, the most handsome guy in the world or the smartest guy in the world or whatever. Just God sovereignly picks him. And as we're going to see as we go through this, you know, God says, you know, I can pick whoever I want to do whatever I want. Not because you have some special attributes that nobody else has. But if you're willing to follow, if you're willing to obey, then you're going to be used. Right? So, I mean, look what a mess David was. We studied 1 and 2 Samuel. Look what a mess Peter was. You know, all these people were kind of a mess, but then they were used in huge ways. So this guy, you know, he's rich. We already went through all this. God calls him and says, get up, go. And remember, the Hebrew means right now, get up and go. Not put your affairs in order, pack, you know, put a forwarding address at the post office, tell all the people on your email list you're leaving. It's like, get up and go. And he obeys. And it's kind of, it's reminiscent of, if you listen to any of the podcasts I put out, I just did one about the flight into Egypt. I don't know if you heard that yet. It's very similar to what happens with Joseph, St. Joseph. The angel says, get the child and his mother and go. And he goes that same night. He doesn't say, well, you know, everybody's asleep. I don't want to wake them up. We finally got little baby Jesus asleep and he's been crying all day. So, you know, maybe we'll go in a couple of days. He goes that very night. It's kind of the same thing Abraham does. There's a, you know how we talk about how synagogues have a cycle of readings, and the cycle of readings that has to do with that is, has the name that basically means get up and go. No waiting around. So Abraham goes, and remember, he doesn't know who God is. He's following a voice. I'm going to take you to a land that I'm going to show you. But he obeys. And because he has faith and obeys, it's counted as righteousness, it says. Was he really righteous? I don't know, probably not. Remember Romans 8, it says nobody is righteous, not one. So I'm sure Abraham wasn't the holiest guy in the world. He just got picked. Moses wasn't the holiest guy in the world. He killed somebody. He was disobedient sometimes. He argued with God a lot. And David, you know, was a disaster. But he was a man after God's own heart. Even though he had women and killed people and schemed. And so he goes to the land. But the important thing is God makes some promises, right? What were the promises? Land, descendants. Everyone in the world is going to be blessed because of you. 75-year-old guy living like 2,500 years before Jesus. Everybody in the world is going to be blessed because of him. And he obeys. Now, how can everybody in the world be blessed because of him? Right. So here we are, 2016, you know, sitting on the shore of Lake Erie, pretty much, and we're still talking about Abraham. Can you imagine if God would have said to Abraham, you know, 3,000 years from now, 4,000 years from now, people are still going to be talking about you. He would have been like, what? Would have no way to comprehend that. But because of his most important descendant, we're here because of that. But anyway, so he's our father in faith, even though we're Gentiles. We're not related to him, right? We have different DNA than he did. Jesus had very similar DNA to what he had. But we're spiritual children. Like also when we studied Romans, you know, Paul says, you know, just because you're related to Abraham doesn't mean you're an awesome person who's on their way to heaven, because it doesn't work that way. We're spiritual children of Abraham. So if you believe, if you follow, you're doing what Abraham did. You know? That's why John the Baptist and Jesus himself criticized the Pharisees, because they always used the excuse, well, we're children of Abraham. And Jesus said, God can make children of Abraham from these stones if he wants to. If you were really Abraham's children, you'd be doing Abraham things. But instead, you're doing devil things, so actually Satan's your father. And when you say stuff like that, the Pharisees, it doesn't endear you to them. They don't like that. So now we got a big problem. Abraham is old. Sarah, who at this point her name is still Sarai, is old. And he's going to have so many descendants that he's not even going to believe it. Sounds kind of hard to believe. Because generally people that age don't start having lots of descendants. And at this point, he doesn't even have one. So we're going to go to Genesis 16. And remember, we're not reading everything in detail. And please, you know, if you have Jewish friends, please don't tell them we're going through Genesis and, you know, 2 hours, or whatever it is, hour and a half last time, an hour today. No, it's more than that, because, you know, they may spend their whole life just studying one part of the Torah, because you can study it your whole life. If you go to Jerusalem, there's all these little hole-in-the-wall places where there's men, because women aren't really supposed to be in there studying with them. Women are in a separate place. But you see these guys, and they all wear like white shirts, ties, hat, and they sit there. They got books and everything open, and scrolls even, and they're there all day studying, day after day after day. You know, we can't even do it for 2 hours. So now, like everybody else, you know, there's a plan that's going to come now where Sarah is going to try to hurry the plan along. And Abraham's going to go along with it. Now, God's got the plan. They don't believe the plan because they're old. But at least they don't believe the descendant part of it. Maybe you'd believe you're going to get land. But if you haven't had any descendants by the time you're this age, chances are slim you're going to have any descendants. So now Sarah has a bright idea. Now, and Abraham goes along with it because to him this sounds like a great idea too. Because after all, he's going to get to be with a young woman. And he, you know, says, oh, okay, if you really want me to. But that's supposed to be a joke. This is a tough audience. But and you remember, just when we left off last time, God makes a covenant with Abraham, with the animals and the blood and the passing between the animals. Abraham's half asleep, so he tells him again the promises. This is serious business. When God makes promises, you have to take it seriously. But, you know, we have lots of promises God makes us, but do we really take it seriously? You know, I don't always. You know, we do, you know, we say a lot of stuff, you know, like it says in Isaiah, you know, these people give me lip service, but their hearts are far from me. That applies to almost everybody. Oh, yeah, he's my God. I do whatever he says. Well, it doesn't last very long. Or, I'm going to follow, but right now today's not really a good day for following, but maybe next week I'll start following. You know, it goes on and on. So now starting in 16, we have a plan. So somebody read 1 through 6. Real loud.
Now Sarai, Abram's wife, bore him no children. She had an Egyptian maid whose name was Hagar, and Sarai said to Abram, "Behold now, the Lord has prevented me from bearing children. Go into my maid. It may be that I shall obtain children by her." And Abram hearkened to the voice of Sarai. So after Abram had dwelt 10 years in the land of Canaan, Sarai, Abram's wife, took Hagar the Egyptian, her maid, and gave her to Abram, her husband, as a wife. And he went in to Hagar, and she conceived. And when she saw that she had conceived, she looked with contempt on her mistress. And Sarai said to Abram, "May the wrong done to me be on you. I gave my maid to your embrace, and when she saw that she had conceived, she looked on me with contempt. May the Lord judge between you and me." But Abram said to Sarai, "Behold, your maid is in your power. Do to her as you please." Then Sarai dealt harshly with her, and she fled from her.
So Sarah has a plan. In 10 years they've been in Canaan now. So they got up, go, here's the promise. So 10 years, nothing's happened. So remember, last time we read that Abraham said to them that, "I'm not going to have children because I'm old, so maybe my servant Eliezer is going to be my servant." And God said, no, because your service, the child of promise, is going to come through you. It's not going to be your servant Eliezer. So now Sarah makes the plan. We got to get some kind of baby going here, or else none of this is going to work. So she gives her servant to Abram. And she conceives. So she's now the servant girl. I mean, it doesn't say how old she is, but you get the idea, she's young. So the servant girl's pregnant, Sarah's not. So there's the friction between them now. So Sarah, whose idea this was in the first place, is now mad at Abraham and the servant. Because this girl is, you know, the servant, means sort of like a slave, I guess, you know, they could do whatever they want with her. It's a different time. I mean, this in days of slavery in our country, you can imagine this kind of thing happen all the time. When you're the master of the slave, you can do whatever you want with the slave. So they dealt partially with her, and she left. So now this girl's pregnant, and she's sort of thrown out. Now see, they interfered with God's plan. This is not the plan. The plan is Abraham and Sarah are going to have the child that God is interested in. Not Abraham and an Egyptian girl. So, she runs away. So, somebody read 7 through 14.
The Lord's messenger found her by a spring in the wilderness, the spring on the road to Shur. Then he asked, "Hagar, maiden Sarai, where have you come from and why? Where are you going?" She answered, "I am running away from my mistress, Sarai. But the Lord's messenger told her, "Go back to your mistress and submit to her abusive treatment. I will make your descendants so numerous," added the Lord's messenger, "that they will be too many to count. Besides, the Lord's messenger said to her, 'You are now pregnant and shall bear a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard you. God answered you. He shall be a wild ass of a man, his hand against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. In opposition to all his kin shall he encamp." The Lord who spoke to her, she gave a name, saying, "You are the God of vision." She meant, "Have I really seen God and remained alive after my vision?" That is why the well is called Beer Lahai-ro. It is between Kadesh and Bered. Hagar bore Abram a son, and Abram named the son whom Hagar bore him. Ishmael. Abram was 86 years old when Hagar bore him Ishmael.
Yeah. So say 6-year-old guy gets his first son. Could be his great grandfather or great great grandfather, but anyway. So the angel of the Lord comes. Now this is an interesting description of something. You see, Lord's all capitalized. That's God's name. And in the Hebrew, the English translation, angel of the Lord, is Malach Adonai, which means a messenger of the Lord. Sometimes it's an angel, and sometimes it's God in some form that can be seen or heard. Here, this is God intervening, because you see what Hagar says. "I have really seen God and remained alive after seeing him." So whether this is an angel or whether this is some manifestation of God can be debated. But Hagar thinks it's God. So he tells her, "You're pregnant, I know, you're going to have a son, and I know Sarah's treating you terribly, but you have to go back there and submit to her. And you're going to name the boy Ishmael." You know, lots of people in the scriptures, somebody, the angel or somebody tells them what they're going to be named. You know, we have that with John the Baptist. We have that with Jesus. We have a lot of people. So this baby's going to be named Ishmael. That means God hears. Because Hagar is dejected, walking. She's, you know, praying, thinking. And all of a sudden, God hears her and says, "You're going to have a son, Ishmael, but you have to go back and be with Sarah and Abraham." Ishmael is the father of the Arabs. In the Quran, he's the main guy, not Isaac, who, of course, is our main guy. Islam, they think that the scriptures, the original scriptures, were perverted to make Isaac the child of promise, when actually it was Ishmael. And not to cast dispersions on Arabs, but he shall be a wild donkey of a man, his hand against every man and every man's hand against him. So this is going to be like a, you know, strong, irritating guy who gets everybody mad, and he fights everybody, everybody fights him. And he's going to be the father of the Arabs. So it's very interesting. Very interesting.
That's the proof of the pudding, right?
Yeah. And because Abraham got promises, and this is basically Abraham's son, even though it's a different woman, Hagar slash Ishmael also get promises now. You can see here. This is another way you know this is not probably an angel, this is probably God. Because an angel can't really make promises to you. See, the angel said, I will multiply your descendants that they cannot be numbered for multitude. In other words, this boy is going to have so many descendants that you're not even going to be able to count them. Now, in Hebrew, in the biblical languages, they didn't really comprehend like big numbers. You know, like you see many references to 1,000, to 10,000. They thought 10,000 was like the most amazing number. So that's why it says like the Messiah is the fairest of 10,000. God owns the cattle on 1,000 hills. Well, we don't think that's that big of a deal. Because we can imagine numbers that are, you can't even name them all. So, you know, however many Arabs there are in the world now, you know, a couple hundred million. If the angel would have said he's going to have 200 million descendants, everybody would have been like, ooh, dude, I can't understand that. So you're not going to be able to count the descendants. So little Ishmael, before he's even born, he gets promises too. Because God likes Ishmael, as we're going to see later. So we got little Ishmael, and interestingly, in this ancient culture, you know, when you were a mistress of some guy, you didn't have a lot of rights. Certainly if you were a slave girl. But the children were recognized. Now, they weren't like the natural-born children, but they still had, like, some inheritance rights and some rights to be around the father. Because after all, in ancient times, I mean, the important thing was men wanted to have sons, and, you know, that was, like, the big thing. So even though, you know, this was a, quote, illegitimate son, he does have some rights. But Hagar, no, because she's a slave. Now, if Abraham had had a mistress who was not a slave, say some woman from the next village, that woman would have no rights, but the son could claim some rights. So if Abraham died and he was the only son, he would inherit Abraham's stuff, even though he was, quote, illegitimate. But, so there's the situation now. So Sarah's still a mess. Abraham's still a mess. So now, 17. Somebody read 1 through 8.
When Abram was 99 years old, the Lord appeared to Abram and said, I am God the Almighty. Walk in my presence and be blameless. Between you and me, I will establish my covenant, and I will multiply you exceedingly. Abram fell face down, and God said to him, for my part here is my covenant with you. You are to become the father of a multitude of nations. No longer will you be called Abram. Your name will be Abraham, for I am making you the father of the multitude of nations. I will make you exceedingly fertile, I will make nations of you. Kings will stem from you. I will maintain my covenant between me and you and your descendants after you throughout the ages as an everlasting covenant to be your God and the God of your descendants after you. I will give to you and to your descendants after you the land in which you are now residing as aliens, the whole land of Canaan, as a permanent possession, and I will be their God.
Okay, stop there. Stop there. Okay, so now God restates the promises to Abraham. And as Larry points out, 13 more years has gone by. He's 86, now he's 99. So we don't know what he's doing all this time. The promises get restated to him in a visible way. He sees God in some form. These are called theophanies. It's a theophany. It's an appearance of God in a form that you can see. These may be what are called Christophanies, which is the second person of the Trinity, Jesus, who's later going to be Jesus of Nazareth, appearing in human form, what's commonly called the pre-incarnate Christ. Melchizedek was probably one of these things. Daniel, the book of Daniel, is a couple of times where somebody who's probably Jesus appears. And this may be, but they see God. He sees God in a physical form and tells him again, you're going to be multiplied exceedingly. Now, he's 99 years old. He doesn't even have at this point, he's got Ishmael, who must be like almost at least 12 years old by now. But he says, you're going to have all these descendants. And I got a covenant with you. He made a covenant. When God makes a covenant, that's a binding thing. This isn't like us breaking promises with people. You know? Like if I say to him, every time it snows, I'm going to come shovel your driveway. And then it snows, I say, I don't feel like going down there now. You know? You can't trust a human to keep promises like that. But God makes a covenant. He reminds Abraham, we have a covenant. So don't forget, I'm God. I don't think like you do. When I make a covenant with you, it's serious business. we live in the new covenant, right? Mm-hmm. We live in the new covenant that tells us about salvation. Now, do you think next week God may change his mind and say, okay, we did this salvation thing in Jesus for 2,000 years, starting on February 1st, there's going to be a new way of salvation. I changed my mind. No, that's not going to happen. Because he doesn't change his mind. If God changed his mind, then what position would we be in? We wouldn't know what was going to happen next. It'd be kind of unsettling. You're saved by what Jesus did, but after February 1st, that's not going to matter. There's going to be a new plan. So he says, I have a covenant with you, and you're going to be the father of a multitude of nations. You're going to be exceedingly fruitful. He's 99 years old. He's got one kid. He's not even from his marriage. That doesn't sound exceedingly fruitful to me. And he's probably thinking now, God, I don't know you beings in heaven do about having children. But down here, when you're 99 and you've got one son, that's pretty much it. So, and this covenant is going to go to every generation. Not 20 generations, not 5, not 100. Every generation. So in 2016, still in place. If Jesus doesn't come back by 2516, still going to be in place. Every generation. Throughout all your generations, it's everlasting. In other words, I'm not going to make you a promise and then go back on it. This is the big debate in Christian history. Are God's promises to the Jews still in effect? Or did the promises to the Jews then become the promises to the church? So we're not going to talk about that. But you can see he's made a covenant with Abraham and says, that's going to be good for all generations. So who are Abraham's children? The Jews. But the Arabs are too. In a little different way. So this is pretty cool. So he says, the covenant is, I'm going to be your God. You're going to be the father of nations. And this land is going to be your possession. The land of Canaan. He didn't give them Colorado. He didn't give them Mongolia. He gave them Canaan, which is basically present-day Israel and Jordan. So that's going to be your land forever. So Jews call Israel the land. When they say, you know, I'm going to the land, everybody knows what that means. Nobody says, what land? Are you going to Utah? No, what land? No, going to the land means you're going to Israel. You're going to that area. There's kind of a bond because of this between the people and the land. Now, that doesn't mean that everything Israel does is right. Right? Because they're human beings too. It doesn't mean they're all right 100% of the time and the Arabs are 100% wrong all the time. It doesn't mean that, but it means this is the land that was promised to them. And if you can see, when the Jews left the land after the Romans just destroyed everything and they went all into all the rest of the world, what happened to that land? It was a desolate desert that nobody wanted. Everything was sand. Mark Twain went there and said, there's not a green thing. And now they export oranges. All the Galilee's farm country. Green everywhere. Everything's green. You know, when the people are in the land looks great. When the people are out of the land looks terrible. But there's like a connection between them. From here. So now, God also changes his name. Because you're not Abram anymore, you're Abraham. So somebody read 9 through 10.
God also said to Abraham, on your part, you and your descendants, after you must keep my covenant throughout the ages. This is my covenant with you and your descendants after you that you must keep. Every male among you shall be circumcised.
Sign of the covenant. Circumcision. Nobody else had circumcision. The ancient cultures thought that it was terrible and disgusting because it was a mutilation. Remember when we studied this first and second Samuel, the Philistines thought that circumcision was disgusting. The Egyptians thought it was disgusting. God says you're going to circumcise all your men, sign of the covenant. Why he picked that as a sign of the covenant? I don't know. So, this is going to be the sign of your covenant that you're going to keep. And it's a covenant between me and you. Later on, they're going to start covering their head because every time they realize their head's covered, they realize they're under some God's authority because their head's covered. Remember when we were growing up, women covered their heads going to Mass. It was kind of a similar thing. So this is the sign of the covenant. And still is to this day. When we do the law, when we get to Exodus, you'll remember, on day 8, the boy is circumcised and is named. So in Luke's gospel, Matthew's gospel, what do we hear? when it was time for the child to be circumcised, he was given the name Jesus. So on day 8, little baby Jesus, little Yeshua, gets circumcised because he's a real human baby boy. His body's not an illusion. It's not some kind of cosmic projection. It's a little boy who's 8 days old. When we learned about, remember the son that David had with Bathsheba that died? He died in 1 week, not quite to the 8th day, so the boy doesn't have a name. He's always called the boy or the son of Bathsheba. He doesn't have a name. If you died before the 8th day, you didn't have a name. Interestingly, Jesus, who's God, who's part of what Moses saw as the Shekinah glory, right? Jesus was on Mount Sinai giving the law because he's God. But when he comes as Jesus of Nazareth, he subjects himself to the covenant. He could have said, as little baby Jesus, newborn Jesus, he could have said to Mary and Joseph, look, I'm the Messiah, remember? The angel told you, I'm God's son. So you don't have to worry about all that stuff with me because I'm going to take care of that. No, he subjects himself to the covenant. Do you think it ever crossed Mary and Joseph's mind that they weren't going to do that on the 8th day? Did Joseph say, you know, 8th day doesn't work for us because I got to work that day and my uncle's coming from somewhere, so why don't we do it on the 15th day? No, 8th day they did it. Presentation in the temple for a boy has to be day 40. 40th day they're there. They don't say, listen, we're going to go back to Nazareth, kind of get some stuff going, and we'll come back on day 68 and do it. Day 40, they're there. Because they keep the law. And remember, he's named Yeshua, which means salvation. It's very powerful. When you see the name Jesus, you don't get that because that's the English version of it. But what they're saying is the baby's name Salvation, because that's the name the angel gave him. So start reading at 11. Let's do 11 through 14.
Circumcise the flesh of your foreskin, and that shall be the mark of the covenant between you and me. Throughout the ages, every male among you, when he is 8 days old, shall be circumcised, including house-born slaves and those acquired with money from any foreigner who is not of your blood. Yes, both the house-born slaves and those acquired with money must be circumcised. Thus my covenant shall be in your flesh as an everlasting pact. If a male is uncircumcised, that is, if the flesh of his foreskin has not been cut away, such a one shall be cut off from his people, and he has broken my covenant.
So, if you're a boy, if you're a man, and you've not been circumcised, you're not in the covenant. So the sign of the covenant, it's a physical sign. See, like I can't tell if he's been baptized. I can tell if he's been circumcised. We have a spiritual sign that we're in the covenant. Right? Because when you're baptized, you have a mark put on you that's nobody can see. I mean, we can't see it. God can see it. Probably angels can see it, you know. But circumcision, anybody can see it. So when little baby Moses went swimming with his little Egyptian friends, they could say, hey, wait a minute, how come he looks different than me? They knew something was different. It's a sign that something's happened to you that's different than everybody else. It's a physical sign of the covenant. And what else happens when you circumcise a boy who's 8 days old? I mean, they bleed. Not a lot of blood, but they bleed. There's always blood in every covenant. They have a very sharp blade to do it. The baby screams. They have, you know, the old rabbis just did it just as good. If I did it just as well as a urologist would do it now. But they got very adept at doing it because, you know, if you were living in Jerusalem then, you know, There were lots of boys being born, so you did lots of circumcisions. And if, I don't know if you've ever been to a party of a little boy who's been circumcised. It's a big festivity. Because if you're a Jewish couple, you have a boy, it's day 8, the rabbi comes to your house, does the circumcision in the bedroom, everybody else is waiting outside, they hear the kids start screaming, everybody comes out, then it's party time. They have really expensive food, lots of people, everybody drinks. And why is that important? Because now here's another person in the covenant. Girls just automatically get in. Now, look what happens in 15. Okay, so all the men are going to be circumcised. So that means Isaac, Ishmael, Jacob, Esau. And the Arabs circumcise their boys. Because Abraham's their father. See, they would read this as Allah tells Abraham this, and then Ishmael's born, and Ishmael's the important guy. Isaac's kind of irrelevant. And that when, we're going to learn later, when Abraham's going to sacrifice Isaac, they believe it was actually Ishmael that was going to be sacrificed. That's another story. Now look what happens in 15. You have somebody start reading.
God truly said to Abraham, as for your wife Sarai, do not call her Sarai. Her name shall be Sarah. I will bless her, and I will give you a son by her. Him also will I bless. He shall give rise to nations, and rulers of people shall issue from him. Abraham prostrated himself and laughed, as he said to himself, can a child be born to a man who is 100 years old? Or can Sarah give birth at 90? Then Abraham said to God, let but Ishmael live on by your favor. God replied, nevertheless, your wife Sarah is to bear you a son, and you shall call him Isaac. I will maintain my covenant with him as an everlasting pact to be his God, and God of his descendants after him.
Okay, pause there for a second. So look what's happening here. Abraham, we just talked about Abraham has faith, he believes, he obeys, and it's counted as righteousness. So now God says, you're going to have a son, you're going to name him Isaac, and what does he do? He laughs. He falls down and he laughs. Now, if you tell somebody, you know, like if we're doing something here and I tell you something and you start laughing at me, what would be my reaction? I'd say, you better stop laughing at me. But, you know, God's not fazed by that. He doesn't care that he's laughing. But it's interesting that first he changes Sarai's name to Sarah, which means princess. Sarah means princess. I'm not sure why I named her a princess. I will bless her, and moreover, I will give you a son by her. In other words, the child of the covenant is coming through her, not through the Egyptian girl, not through however many slave girls you want to bring, not through some kid you're going to adopt somewhere, not some kid who's living in the next village. It's going to come from her. And he even says you're going to name him Isaac. Now we remember that. Now when we read this in English, we say, okay, his name's Isaac. What's his real name? What does it mean? You guys already took the course once. It means laughter. His name's Yitzhak. You hear lots of Israeli guys named Yitzhak. That's Isaac. His name's Yitzhak, which means laughter. So God names the boy Laughter because Abraham falls down laughing. It's kind of cute. Before that, he was going to name him Bob, but then he changed his mind. Or maybe it was Larry. I don't know. But he was
right?
Yeah. And again, you know, when you see a translation into another language, you know, it doesn't, you don't get the full impact of it. You say his name's Isaac. So Abraham then laughs and says, be born to a man who's 100 and a woman who's 90. Come on, let's get serious here. Then he refers back to Ishmael. Says, well, I already got the one boy. He's like, you know, 12 or 13 by now. He goes, I already got the one boy. Maybe we need to start, we can just start with him. See, he still doesn't quite grasp it. And again, it's set up so God shows his sovereignty and his power, right? If he'd have picked Abram when he was 20, he said, oh, you're going to have a son and you're going to name him. Everybody said, okay, cool. But when you're 99, that's a different story. So God says, no, it's not going to be Ishmael. Ishmael's nice, but he's not the child of the covenant. He says, Sarah, your wife, will bear you a son, and you shall call his name Isaac. So now Isaac's called the child of promise, because now the promise goes to him. The covenant goes to him. All the nations of the earth are going to be blessed through you, Abraham. All the nations of the earth are going to be blessed through you, Isaac. And then, of course, then it's going to be Jacob. And God's going to say, all the nations of the earth are going to be blessed by you, Jacob. These are all the line of Messiah. In other words, Jesus is descended from Isaac, not Ishmael. Right? Jesus is descended from Jacob, not from Esau, his brother. Jesus is descended from Judah, not from Zebulun or Dan or Gad or Reuben or any of the other things. Any other sons. So it says, I will establish my covenant with him, meaning Isaac, an everlasting covenant for his descendants. In other words, the covenant I made with you now goes to Isaac. Remember, he said it's going to be all generations. So it's going to be Isaac next. Not going to be Ishmael. Okay, now somebody read 20 and 21.
Now as for Ishmael, I will heed you. I hereby bless him. I will make him fertile and will multiply him exceedingly. He will become the father of 12 chieftains, and I will make of him a great nation. But my covenant I will maintain with Isaac, whom Sarah shall bear to you by this time next year. Mm-hmm.
So, what's God saying? I like Ishmael. He's going to have a lot of descendants. Rulers are going to come from him. And all you have to do is look how many Arabs there are, how many Arab rulers there have been. Those are all people that are descended from Ishmael. So God kept that promise too. But he says, my covenant, though, is going to be with Isaac, who Sarah is going to bear. Not the son of the slave girl. So when we fast forward to Jesus is walking around, anybody there was Abraham's son that he was interacting with, because they were all descended from Abraham. And some of the people across the river who were at that time pagans before Islam came, they're descended from Abraham too, but not through Sarah, not through Isaac, not through Jacob. So the covenant, the promise, is through Isaac. Interestingly, Ishmael's nice, but Isaac's the guy. Because that's how I want it. That's how he wants it. So, fast forwarding again, when Jesus is walking around on the earth, he knows that he's physically descended from Isaac, right? And he, because they all are, he knows he's physically descended from Jacob, because they all are. But then, when you got the 12 sons that Jacob has, Jesus is in the tribe of Judah. He's physically descended from Judah. So he knows that because he knows he's the Messiah. So he knows what his descent is. It wasn't a mystery to Jesus who he descended from. So when you look at it, he's the promise of the covenant, he's the promise of Messiah. Goes through Isaac. Okay, so somebody read 22 to the end of 17.
When he had finished speaking with him, God departed from Abraham. Then Abraham took his son Ishmael and all his slaves, whether born in his house or acquired with his money, every male among the members of Abraham's household, and he circumcised the flesh of their foreskins on that same day, as God had told him to do. Abraham was 99 years old when the flesh of his foreskin was circumcised, and his son Ishmael was 13 years old when the flesh of his foreskin was circumcised. Thus, on that same day, Abraham and his son Ishmael were circumcised, and all the male members of his household, including the slaves born in his house or acquired with his money from foreigners, were circumcised with him.
Now, when does he do it? The same day. Even though he laughs, God says the sign of the covenant is going to be this. All the boys have to be circumcised. From now on, that same day, he circumcises Ishmael. He circumcises all the slave men and boys. Because, of course, nobody's been circumcised yet. And presumably he circumcised himself, because he was circumcised when he was 99 years old. So all the men in the house were circumcised, whether they were slaves or whether they were family members. And it tells us specifically Ishmael's 13, like we kind of figured out. So, man, you know, Ishmael's like a, you know, adolescent boy. Anybody say, well, there's the story now. We got a covenant and we got a sign of the covenant. Now, again, we're going to go into the law, which is very physical. Everything the law does, you know how in the church we have sacraments, and sacraments have actually all the senses are involved. Right? You see things, you smell things, you hear things, you touch things. All the senses are involved. But it's a spiritual thing that you get, that you experience it with your senses. Here it's a physical sign. In all the laws, it would be a physical sign. You wash your hands a certain way, you cook the food a certain way, you don't do this, you do that. But then, when it comes to the Messiah, then after that, it's going to be grace and it's going to be spiritual. It's not going to be a physical thing that's going to happen to you. So now in 18, look what's going to happen. This is really cool. I'll be doing it on time. Okay, good. We'll finish on time. So let's see. Somebody read 1 through 8.
The Lord appeared to Abraham by the oak of Mamre as he sat in the entrance of his tent while the day was growing hot. Looking up, he saw three men standing near him.
Pause. Okay. What's it say here? The Lord appeared to him. All capital letters. Looked up, he saw three men. It says, the Lord appeared, he saw three men. Go.
When he saw them, he ran from the entrance of the tent to greet them, and bowing to the ground, he said, Sir, if it displeases you, do not go on past your servant. Let some water be brought that you may bathe your feet, and then rest under the tree. Now that you have come to your servant, let me bring you a little food, that you may refresh yourselves, and afterwards you may go on your way. Very well, they replied. Do as you have said. Abraham hurried into the tent to Sarah and said, quick, 3 measures of bran flour, knead it and make bread. He ran to the herd, picked out a tender, choice calf, and gave it to a servant who quickly prepared it. Then he got some curds and milk, as well as the calf that had been prepared, and set these before them, waiting on them under the tree while they ate.
Okay, so what's happening here, this is like sort of Middle Eastern hospitality. You know, when strangers show up, you have to feed them and you have to do all kinds of stuff. So the Lord comes, there's 3 men. So Abraham bows down to him, says, I'm going to get you, going to wash your feet, going to get you guys something to eat. We're going to have bread. He's not doing it, of course, Sarah and the servants are doing it. He was, you know, having chips and dip and stuff while they were waiting for the real food. But so he gets these 3 men, does them a big service, feeds them, gives them water, washes their feet. And they're going to have like a big meal. They're going to have meat. They're going to have bread. He's not just going to have some snacks. Now, meat's a big thing in these days, right? The fact that you would, 3 guys would come to your house and you would go kill one of your calves, that's a big deal. Okay, now read, start reading at 9, whoever, Neva, if you want to keep going, or somebody else wants to go.
Where's your wife Sarah, they asked him. There in the tent, he replied. One of them said, I will return to you about this time next year, and Sarah will then have a son.
Pause. The Lord appeared. Abraham looks up and sees 3 men. Here it says, they said to him, where is your wife Sarah? And he said, she's in the tent. The Lord, all capital, said, I, now there's 3 guys who say, I will return in the spring, and Sarah, your wife, shall have a son. So it's 3, it's 1, it's 3, then it's 1 again. There's this alternating between 1 and 3. So this is clearly a theophany, a manifestation of God. In 3. There's a cool book out, I forgot who wrote it. The book's called Who Had Lunch with Abraham? It's about this vision, so it's pretty cool. Meantime, the calf's cooking, the bread's baking. And so I will come back next spring and Sarah will have a son. Okay, go ahead.
Now Abraham and Sarah were old, advanced in years, and Sarah had stopped having her menstrual period. So Sarah laughed to herself and said, now that I am worn out and my husband is old, am I still to have sexual pleasure? But the Lord said to Abraham, why did Sarah laugh and say, will I really bear a child old as I am? Is anything too marvelous for the Lord to do? At the appointed time, about this time next year, I will return to you, and Sarah will have a son. Sarah liked saying, I did not laugh because she was afraid. But he said, yes, she did.
I love that. I didn't laugh. So notice this, there's more interplay between 1 and 3. It's the Lord, it's 3 men, then it's I will return and Sarah will have a son. So now it emphasizes again that they're old. I mean, how many times do we have to hear that? It's like, it's always meant, you know, in the book of Hebrews it says they were as good as dead. I mean, but the cool thing here is it reemphasizes how old they were. And it even says, Sarah's not having menstrual periods anymore. Okay, she's 90 years old. We kind of get the idea. You know, in all of human experience, everybody would understand that a 90-year-old woman is not going to be ready for the childbearing. I mean, if you asked any human being in the world, would this woman have a baby, everybody would say, what are you talking about? But that's what makes it amazing. It's like Gideon with 300 men, you know, defeats 10,000 Midianites. When you look at it, 10,000 soldiers rushing 300 soldiers, you kind of know who's going to win. But the 300 guys win. Because God does it to show that he's the one who's really doing it. And we see the same thing with Elizabeth and Zechariah. Zechariah says, dude, how are we going to have a son and name him John when I'm old and my wife's old? So the lesson there is you don't make Gabriel mad.
No.
Just boom, strikes him dumb so he doesn't talk for 9 months and 8 days at least.
And these people laugh.
Yeah, these people laugh. Now see, Mary questioned Gabriel too, but she could get away with it better than Zechariah. Because Mary says, well, how can that be? But maybe she said it in a nicer way. Zechariah kind of laughs at Gabriel and says, come on, are you kidding me? And he says, I'm Gabriel, I stand in the presence of God, and you're not going to talk anymore. So like when Mary goes to visit Elizabeth, you know, Zechariah's just there going. He can't even make a sound. And it's not till John the Baptist, the day that he's circumcised, that he gets his voice back. So that's kind of neat. So now here it says, okay, so they're old. So she says, am I going to do this again now? Shall I bear a child now that I'm old? And then it says, is anything too hard for the Lord? All capital letters. Next sentence is, at the appointed time, I will return to you, and you'll have a son. So now he's talking singular again. I will return to you in the spring. Sarah will have a son. But Sarah denied, saying, I did not laugh, for she was afraid. Then it said he, again, we got a singular, it doesn't say they. It says he said, yes, you did, you laughed. So interestingly, God names the boy Yitzhak, Isaac, laughter, before Abraham and well, after Abraham laughs, but before Sarah laughs. Chapter 21. So somebody read 1 through 7.
The Lord took note of Sarah, as he had said he would. He did for her as he had promised.
Okay, pause. God keeps his promises. See, it says, the Lord visited Sarah as he said. The Lord did to Sarah what he had promised. Didn't say, well, you know, on second thought, she is kind of old. Maybe I should just have Abraham marry somebody else and start with that. Or maybe, well, he's kind of old too. Maybe I should just pick another couple. Somebody that can, you know, somebody who's in childbearing age. But no, he remembers the promise that he makes to Abraham, and it says the Lord visited her like he promised. Okay, go ahead.
Sarah became pregnant and bore Abraham a son in his old age. At the set time that God had stated, Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son of his whom Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him, as God had commanded. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Sarah then said, oh, God has given me cause to laugh, and all who hear of it will laugh. Who would have told Abraham, she added, that Sarah would nurse children? Yet, I have borne him a son in his old age. Isaac grew, and on the day of the child coming, Abraham held a great feast.
Okay. Pause there. So look how cool this is. Now, did you notice as she read that, that we all laughed? So again, God's promise was fulfilled. Or Sarah says, God's made laughter for me, and everyone who hears this will laugh. And we're still laughing.
Yeah.
4,000 years later, you read this and you still laugh. You can't help but laugh. Because it's kind of cute. You know, there's two people laughing. You name the boy Laughter. And then he says, well, God really made me laugh. Now everybody who hears this is going to laugh. Okay. So that's pretty neat. So he remembers the promise. She conceives. And God told them ahead of time what they're going to name the boy. Like when Mary delivers baby Jesus in this messy place with this messy delivery and, you know, Joseph's in the corner about ready to throw up because, you know, men didn't hang around for childbirth in those days. I mean, it was a mess, right? It wasn't these cute nativity scenes where they were going with their hands folded. It was a mess. Blood and fluid everywhere, animals, hay, and there's a baby laying in the hay. So the thing is, it's an unbelievable circumstance that only God can engineer. Like in Isaiah, it says, you want a sign? I'll give you a sign. A virgin's going to bear a son. He's going to name him Emmanuel. Now, nobody would ever think of a sign like that. Right? But anybody in their wildest dreams think, well, the woman who's a virgin is going to have a son. But Isaiah says that's what's going to happen. You know, here, God says, you're going to have this son and you're going to name him Isaac. So when the boy's born, they name him Isaac. Gabriel says to Mary, you're going to have this son and you're going to name him Jesus. You're going to name him Yeshua because he's going to deliver his people from their sins. He's going to sit on the throne of David, his father. That's a lot of stuff to tell a young girl. What's he talking about? Angels, thrones, salvation, David. I mean, that's a lot of stuff coming at a young girl. So when she delivers the baby, her and Joseph don't sit around and say, what should we name this boy? Maybe we should name him Joseph after you. They know what they're going to name them because the angel told them. These two know what they're going to, they know they're going to name the boy Isaac because God told them you're going to name him Isaac. So that's pretty neat. When back to Zechariah and Elizabeth, Gabriel says, you're going to name him John. So then when he's born and they're going to name him and circumcise him, everybody says, why are you going to name him John? Nobody in your family's named John. Why don't you name him Zechariah? But Zechariah, who's learned his lesson by this time, you know, writes down his name is John, and then he can talk. So he's obedient, and these people follow what they've been told and name the baby what they've been told to name the baby. They don't suddenly decide to name him Ralph. Because they like the name. Abraham has a big party when the boy's weaned. And he also circumcises Isaac on the eighth day. Because God had told him, on the eighth day, you're going to circumcise the boys. So when Isaac's born on the eighth day, he's circumcised. Because again, like Joseph and Mary, Abraham doesn't say, I don't feel like doing it today. We'll do it tomorrow instead. You know? It would be like us saying, I don't feel like going to church on Sunday. I'll go Monday, it'll be the same. I don't feel like going today. So they obey. Let's end it with Isaac, since he's the child of promise. Because now, as you can imagine, there's an issue, because now you got Abraham and you got his real wife with a baby that's both of their babies. And you got this other boy, Ishmael, who's now more than 13, 14, 15, but you know, he's probably 14 by now. And his mother, who's the slave woman. So this makes for kind of a lot of family tension. So now we got to Isaac. So you're going to have all these descendants. You're not even going to be able to count them. So far, he's got Isaac, and he's got Ishmael. That's not a lot of descendants. and he's 100 years old. But now the covenant's made, and it's